am not ashamed of the gospel, the good news about messianic salvation through Messiah Yeshua, the Lord Jesus, because this message is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes and embraces this message, first to the Jewish people and then to the Gentiles. Shalom, this is Rabbi Loren live via Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael with Jesus Made Me Kosher. Well, politics are heating up in the state of Michigan, and my guest today is Glenn Clark, director of Michigan Faith and Freedom Coalition. Glenn had a big event today with Senator Rick Santorum, but before we get to that, I want to welcome Glenn to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Shalom, Glenn.
Hello, Rabbi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being my guest. Let's start, Glenn, by telling the audience a little bit about yourself. When did you become a Christian? How did Jesus make you kosher?
Well, that's a very good story. I grew up in a church, respected God and his ways, but I didn't have a personal relationship with the Lord. And I met some Christian friends in the early 90s, and I knew something was different about them. They had something. It was almost as if they had a light inside themselves that I knew that I didn't have. So I talked to them. I was visited their evangelical church. And the Holy Spirit worked on me, and I eventually gave my heart to the Lord. I knew he was pursuing me. I call it the Hound of Heaven. I guess there's a book by that name. And he pursued me in a very aggressive but gentlemanly way, and I gave my heart to him in around 93 and a half.
So about 18 years ago.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, you are very much involved in politics in the state of Michigan. Why did you get involved in politics?
Well, I've always been interested in it. My class, I went to Lutheran school. My class project in 1976 was to be involved in presidential campaigning in the classroom. I thought it was a wonderful opportunity. The teacher said we could pick any candidate we wanted to get behind. I chose Gerald Ford. I thought he had a lot more leadership than Jimmy Carter, who was a Democrat. Learned a little bit more about the political parties and the structures and the positions of candidates. And a little bit later, a little bit older, I found out about abortion. I couldn't believe that any political party and or candidate would ever embrace that culture of destruction. And I started realizing that I was drawn to Republicans who espoused social, traditional positions. And beyond that, I started learning more, and I realized, you know, growing up in a church that respected the state of Israel and our special relationship between the United States and the state of Israel, I liked candidates like Ronald Reagan, who was – I was a young sophomore in high school when Ronald Reagan was running, and I realized he respected our relationship with Israel, wanted a strong national defense, a strong foreign policy, limited federal government, and in espousing those traditional social issues. And I thought, gosh, I found a home here. So I've been active looking Republican politics, but more importantly, conservative and pro-life, pro-traditional marriage issues my entire life.
Glenn, politics today has a reputation for being dirty. Isn't politics too dirty for the average Christian to get involved in?
It's only dirty if you choose to conduct yourself in a dirty fashion. Yeah, certainly, I think for Christians, anytime we take a stand for what is biblical, what the Lord has for us, what he's called us to do, we're going to get some arrows shot at us. We know that. The Bible talks about that, the fiery arrows of the enemy. But the point is, you can't shoot back in that regard, but you need to stand fast. I went on Channel 2's Let It Rip last night opposite the Democratic State Party Chairman Mark Brewer, and we disagree. I can disagree with him agreeably. The point is that I don't have to come down to mudslinging and or name-calling to accomplish my goal, which is to share the values that are biblical in nature, but they're also very logical, too, at the same time, and to do that in the public square of debate.
You know, a lot of Christians do not involve themselves in politics. Shouldn't we concentrate on spiritual things? If we get involved in politics, won't this distract us from really serving God? What's your answer?
I just see that the founders of our great nation believed with all their being that, you know, the essentially the tree of liberty needs to be renewed on an ongoing basis by our involvement in our government. And by, you know, clearly if you're not working for the government, what does that mean? Well, making sure that the right people are elected, the right issues are brought forward, that our laws are respectful of God. The scripture says that, you know, a nation's blessed when the Lord's laws are the nation's laws. And so therefore, I don't think so. I mean, I think you look at the abolitionist movement in the United States, these churches, these pulpits were aflame with righteousness, calling for the end of slavery. You know, it's not an issue that wasn't brought through a governmental and political change. But, you know, the God of the Bible is the God of our country, and he's the Lord of all. And in the sense that, you know, we have got to dedicate ourselves to promoting what he wants for us at all levels. And, you know, at the end of the day, we can affect great change. The pro-life movement is a perfect example of that. Doesn't mean that you have to run for public office to want to change the laws to protect the preborn children in mothers' wombs who have civil rights protections right now. Unfortunately, our government is not enforcing that. But we can espouse those pro-life principles within the halls of Congress, within the halls of our state capitol, without having to start a political action committee or you know, be a campaign manager.
Okay, thank you. Dr. James Dobson said the following. Tell me if you agree or disagree, and then why. He says that far too many Americans don't vote, and Christians vote at an alarmingly low rate. When people with biblical values don't vote, is it any wonder that policies are enacted that are contrary to Christian core values? We live in a representative form of government where we are its leaders. That means that every citizen has a responsibility to participate in the decisions that are made, and that includes people of faith using their influence for what is moral and just. Agree or disagree?
I completely agree with that. And I would say also, you know, Benjamin Franklin was asked by the famous quote by Franklin, was asked by a lady. He came out of the Continental Congress, and the woman asked Benjamin Franklin, a founder of our country, you know, Mr. Franklin, what kind of government did you give us? And he said, ma'am, a republic if you can keep it. And that's the important point that Franklin had, that we have been blessed by God with this republic or republican form of government, which we call a republic, but we have to participate in it to ensure its survival. We've seen just in the last few years, and certainly over the course of the last couple of decades, reckless policies that don't make sense, that are anti-family, that have destroyed marriages, that trap children in failing public school districts where others are having a great educational experience. But all these things are very important for us to stand up and say we're going to take back our country and basically right the ship. It doesn't mean that we have to have a revolution. It just means that we have to be revolutionary-minded to keep back with that original concept about what our republic is. And the Lord gave it to our country, this republic, the people, and we need to fight every single day to make sure that we're holding our elected officials accountable, and the public servants who represent us on a daily basis. If we're not doing that and keeping a mindful eye, then these things slip in as far as like this HHS mandate by the Obama administration regarding morning after pill being paid for by religious-based institutions. It's shameful, and when unified, we're going to make a difference. But people ultimately need to speak up.
Glenn, you mentioned that we live in a Republican form of government. Tell us the difference between a Republican form of government and just a pure democracy, because there is a difference.
Well, absolutely. Democracy is at the whim of the people. So hypothetically, if the will of the people is that only blue-eyed people should be free and brown-eyed people should be in re-education camps or enslaved, that would be completely okay. In a republic, you have a form of laws. It's the rule of law, and our elected officials represent our interests after election to whatever body, governing body they serve. They get the idea of what the electorate wants them to do, but they have to balance that with the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the laws that have been passed before that. So it's not a pure whim of the people. They actually balance it out, and they look at the Constitution, or hopefully they look at the Constitution. But a democracies fail all the time. Our Republican form of government is well-balanced. There's even the separation of powers we know. There are three branches of government. Remember, the founders envisioned these branches keeping the other branches in check. They essentially did not believe that a unified government of one big level was to be trusted. And so that's why we are in a Republican form are so balanced, or have been. Unfortunately, we still are. We're having a lot of problematic policies that are really destroying our hope for a good future with national debt and bad social policy. But those things can be fixed, and we need to stand together to do it.
I agree with you. Every citizen, especially Christians, have a responsibility to participate in the decisions that are being made, and that includes using their influence for what is moral and just. So Christians need to register to vote. A lot of Christians, Glenn, aren't even registered to vote. They need to register to vote. They need to be informed. They should be informed. If their priority is to watch American Idol or some form of entertainment rather than being politically informed, I just think that's wrong. And they need to vote biblical values. A nation can survive a bad economy, but it cannot survive rejecting God and biblical morality. Psalm 9 says that the nation that forgets God will go to Sheol, Hades, the place of the dead.
Well, I am in complete agreement with you, Rabbi. The fact is that if we're not promoting the moral tenets of the Bible, the real the mores and the norms that make our society a consistent, clear, positive, proactive people in the end, then we have no hope for the future. We have got to go back to the original concept of what our republic was founded on, which was glorifying God and serving each other. And the reality of the situation is, oftentimes because of the last decades of spending and so forth, we've been kind of fallen into the special interest mode. What can I get, or what's good for my business? Instead, we have to start going back to the original intent of our nation, which is what is best for all the people, all the time, essentially, and that we all have a common interest in promoting our nation, but we also have these individual liberties which cannot be thrown away, and they are given to us by our Creator. And I think the HHS mandates by the Obama administration are a clear example of how this is going to be a perpetual battle for us to be involved, because if we're not involved, pro-abortion, pro-homosexual agenda items are going to be forced upon us.
Glenn, sometimes we hear this phrase, separation of church and state, but that's not a phrase that's found in the Constitution. And the Bible teaches a lot about religion and politics, and that the two are very much connected. Let me just give you a couple examples. Proverbs 14, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. So if we're going to be exalted as a nation, great, prosperous, successful, we need to be righteous. We need to be right with God and doing the right things, what God considers right. Sin, going against God's good principles and righteous laws, causes harm, damage, shame. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. And let me just give you one more, Proverbs 29, verse 2. When the righteous increase, the people rejoice, they're happy. But when a wicked man rules, people groan. When the righteous increase, when there are more and more people who know God and are living according to his wise principles, they and their society around them are better off. They are happier. So we want the righteous, genuine Christians and born-again Messianic Jews to increase. We need to cultivate a climate where righteousness can flourish. What do you say?
I completely agree, Rabbi. I believe that, unfortunately, we've been told, and some of us have bought into the lie, that we can't espouse our values within the halls of government and in the public square. There are things for Sunday morning, you know, essentially that we need to stay within our stained glass prisons of church and synagogue and basically just huddle together as believers in the quiet corner of the basement. Instead, you know, I think the founders, I think in particular, the whole concept of the Christian movement internationally has been that government cannot be a weapon for evangelism, clearly, but that the Bible is really concise on this point, that we must promote the moral code, the values, and the truth of Scripture in all areas of our life, not just with our neighbors, being a good neighbor, not just at work and witnessing to folks, but in the halls of government, in the halls the school yards, and in community centers. But government should not be taken out of that picture. This is not a Swiss cheese nation, and we do have the First Amendment right to free speech, so we can tell people our concept of liberty. And I think that the most important thing that we have these days in the United States is religious liberty, although it's constantly under assault.
Glenn, tell us about the Michigan Faith and Freedom Coalition. What is it? What's its history? Why is it necessary?
It really is born out of the old Christian Coalition. Dr. Ralph Reed was the executive director there. Pat Robertson was the national chairman. And that organization folded a number of years ago. But Ralph Reed decided that the values that we were promoting in the public square were too important not to organize for, you know, educational purposes of educating pro-family voters and Christian citizens. So they launched the organization, and now I can keep up with it. They seem to be in over half the states in the country with state affiliates. I'm the president of the state affiliate of Faith and Freedom, so we're Michigan Faith and Freedom Coalition, but we are part of the national organization. And we're a voter education project or organization, educating folks, as I mentioned, voter registration. We're doing citizen action seminars across Michigan. People can go to our website and get more information about us coming to your church or your town or your community at MichiganFFC.com, www.MichiganFFC.com. That's Michigan, like Faith and Freedom Coalition.com. And we do free community citizen action seminars. Beyond that, we lobby the members of Congress for Michigan. We lobby the legislature on important pro-family, pro-life, pro-traditional marriage, even spending and government project bills, which are harmful to our state and our country as far as debt and unnecessary spending. Beyond that, like, for instance, the Michigan Healthcare Exchange, which is funded with Obamacare dollars, we're opposed to that. We want to keep Michigan out of being involved in agreeing to participate and promote Obamacare. But beyond that, at the end of the day, we're also about voter mobilization. We believe we don't endorse candidates, nor are we a partisan organization, but we let people know where the candidates are on the issues. And our event today with Senator Santorum, which was a monstrously successful event, 1,500 people, as of being reported by the Detroit News, is important. And, you know, we've invited all the other presidential candidates, and maybe we'll have some other events. They had not confirmed with us about doing an event in Michigan, but we're open to having more of them come before these voters. And we believe that citizens who have the information necessary on these important public policy issues will make the right decision in how they vote. But the decision will be on them in their conscience.
Okay. Tell us about the importance of Michigan right now in national politics. Michigan is really hot right now, aren't we?
Yes, very much so. Essentially, the talking heads and the political pundits have all essentially said the same thing over and over again. Barack Obama's approval numbers are not good, and he is going to have a hard time getting reelected. At the end of the day, if Barack Obama does not carry Michigan, he cannot win reelection. That's how important Michigan is. And in particular, the southeast Michigan region of the state is a very swing area. It can go with the wind, essentially, you know, for one candidate this time, another next cycle. And at the end of the day, if people choose to have change in Washington this cycle in 2012, Barack Obama may or may not be the next president, just because of people in and around our metro Detroit, southeast Michigan area. And once again, Michigan, if it goes in the Republican column, largely will steal any hope of reelection from Barack Obama's campaign and put it over to the Republican column. Once again, people are going to make their own decision and cast that vote accordingly. But at the end of the day, I personally, in my mind, want a change in the White House. And I think that Barack Obama has harmed our nation through bad public policy. Having said that, I will not be voting for reelection for him.
Okay. Michigan's also hot right now as far as Republican Party politics with the nomination for the presidential candidate. We have a primary coming up in like 2 weeks, and it's really crucial with Rick Santorum, between him and Mitt Romney. Tell us just a little bit about that in maybe like a minute.
Sure. Well, a lot of people are giving Rick Santorum either a first or a second look. In the primaries, February 28th, so everyone plan on voting. Mitt Romney seems to be kind of stuck in the mud and not gaining traction and moving forward. The polls show Rick Santorum, every poll is showing Rick Santorum leading Michigan, some by high single digits, some by double digits. At the end of the day, it's probably going to tighten up. But once again, if Michigan doesn't hand Mitt Romney a victory on February 28th, I think his campaign is in large trouble nationally.
And if Rick Santorum wins the Michigan primary, it could have huge implications for him and his campaign.
I would say yes. If Rick Santorum wins on February 28th here in Michigan, it doesn't launch his campaign because he's already launched, but it gives him such a headwind into going into some of these other states as far as mobilization of voters, financial support from donors, attention from the news media. It really would springboard him towards a nomination victory. If Mitt Romney loses, I think he's going to be limping through the next series of contests in a very troubled manner.
In just about 1 minute, give us a couple things you like about Rick Santorum. You spent time with him the past day. What are some things you like about Senator Santorum?
I've known him over the last couple years. He's a wonderful man of faith. He and his wife have a large family. They're strongly pro-life. He is an incredible advocate for traditional values and traditional marriage, a defense of traditional marriage. He loves the state of Israel. He loves our position in the world as far as having a strong foreign policy, which has been diminished by Barack Obama, and that he believes in restoring that leadership role in the world. And at the end of the day, he said it, I think, in the Detroit News today, that either that we're going to have a president who goes to Washington to change things up dramatically, or do we want somebody who's going to just kind of manage the store a little bit better than it's been tended to? He, I think, would provide the leadership necessary to have a conservative change in Washington as far as the climate there, and I think he'd be a great president.
All right. Glenn, thank you for being my guest on Jesus Made Me Kosher today. And Lord willing, maybe we can discuss some of these things again in the days to come.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thanks so much. God bless you.
God bless you. I want to invite people to our Shabbat services tomorrow at 10:30 at the facilities of Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church. I'd love to have you join us. Congregation Shema Yisrael is open to Jewish believers in Jesus like myself, but also to kosher-hearted Gentiles. We want everyone to come from all kinds of backgrounds and worship the three-in-one God of Israel within this rich Jewish culture, learning more about the Jewish roots of the Christian faith and how Jews and Gentiles are designed by God to come together as one new man, one new united humanity that's going to live forever. Shalom, shalom from Rabbi Lauren and all of us at Congregation Shema Yisrael.
J. Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can join us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.